We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Seahawks Man to Man Podcast, powered by The Athletic. Shout out to the company. My name is Michael Sean Dugar. I'm here with my co-host, Christopher Kidd. Make sure you follow us both up on the tweet machine. You guys know where to follow me on Verify. But since it's our week one, for our new listeners, I'll shout out again, at Mike Dugar on Twitter. I'm verified, so don't worry about looking for it. Just look for the brother, blue check, dreads, that's me. Chris, talk to him.
What is up, everybody? It's your boy, Christopher Kidd. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at CKIDD206, and that's CKID206.
All right, and we have our first special guest to preview an actual game that counts.
Man.
We have been waiting a long time to do this. We have on the line, Colts reporter for The Athletic, Stephen Holder. Stephen. What's going on, man? Welcome to the Man to Man Podcast.
All right, man. I'm happy to be here. Happy to be talking about, like you said, an actual game. It's been way too long, and preseason is trash. So, yes, let's do that.
I don't know. Preseason can get exciting up there in Indy. Who knows? Your franchise quarterback might just retire.
Well, there is that. Yeah, I don't need that much excitement, though.
Yeah, I don't think
that's more than I bargained for.
before we get into Seahawks Colts, which happened this Sunday, I got to shout out Steven, because Steven has been in the game. He's a veteran. Like, Steven's been in the game for a long time. Anytime there's like something happens with a player, I feel like Steven's got a story or an anecdote. especially players who play for the U. How long did you cover the U, right, for a long time?
I went to school there and covered them. So, yeah, I got the full gamut of that experience. So, yeah, I like that. All right, so this is how long I've been doing it. I covered Ed Reed, like, in school, like, in college. So, like, I didn't know he was going to be Ed Reed at the time. But, dang, yeah, that's perspective for you.
Yeah, that with that 2001 team or 2000 team, probably one of the most loaded teams you'll probably ever see.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that I'll never forget it. It was crazy. I believe Frank Gore was, like, third string.
Jesus.
Oh my goodness.
He's like, can I get the ball? Like, yeah, we'll let you know.
And it was fair to do that, though. It was not even like it was shade. It was we got dudes in front of you. Like,
we got he's backing up. He's backing up like Willis McGahee and Clinton Portis. Like, bro, we'll call you when we need you.
Yeah, that's it. I throw that out there because that when Steven has a take, we're on Twitter in a column or whatever, it's informed. It's like it's got a historical background in it. So if you fire off some takes there, boom, I got you covered there. There's the qualifier. But let's get into the quarterback. Let's start with the team at large, because I feel like you guys all need a hug up there in Indy. So many breaking news updates that are devastating. Many of them about COVID. The Colts are one of the more least vaccinated teams in the league. Do you think that's going to ultimately derail their season, potentially, COVID this year?
I think it has the potential to. I think the problem with it is that there's always this looming threat. And look, we are all under threat of COVID, right? I mean, even reporters, we're testing weekly. And I'm not going to lie, I open the test result every week and I'm like, so we all do that, right? But vaccinated or not. However, I think the big distinction, the thing that I always impress upon fans is that the rules are not the same if you're vaccinated versus unvaccinated. And these guys who are unvaccinated, the close contact game that they got to play is real. And we've already seen a lot of guys around the league, you know, get sent home, basically. I mean, the Bills, it's happened to them. It's happened to the Colts a bunch of times already. I mean, they had four starters sitting at home last week, you know, a week before the opener, including the starting quarterback, you know, and not because they were positive. That's the thing. I mean, you know, it'd be one thing. If you're positive, it is what it is. It can happen to any of us. But to be sent home because you're not even positive, you're just a close contact, when if you're vaccinated, that doesn't apply, period. As long as you're negative, you can come to practice the next day. So literally, their difference or their consequence for not being vaccinated, the difference between those two is one guy's at practice the next day, the other guy's sitting at home for 5 days. That's a hell of a difference. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so, and to bring it back to the Colts, for them specifically, their unvaccinated players are largely some of their best players. And we're talking about the quarterback, Carson Wentz, the starting center, Pro Bowl center, Ryan Kelly has admitted he's unvaccinated. Darius Leonard, all pro linebacker, unvaccinated. There's a few other guys. We believe Quentin Nelson as well, all pro guard. Damn.
Like all the best players.
Like literally the very best and most important players on the team are not vaccinated. I mean, if you made a Colts all-star team, it would be like the unvaxxed team. It's crazy.
So I'm gonna peel back the curtain on this from a reporter standpoint. Like, I see you get into a lot of debates with people on Twitter about vaccinations, anything political. Kudos to you, man. I don't have the energy in a lot of this stuff anymore. But like, at the same time, it's very easy for all of us to call like people who won't get the vaccine and their reasonings for not like stupid, like loudly, like, hey guys, you're tripping. Like, your intelligence level must be low. How do you balance that with like you said, the most important guys on the team don't have it? So like, you can't just go up a press conference and call Carson Wentz stupid. Right. Like, how has that balance been for you guys covering the team?
Delicate. So, I mean, it is. You're right, though. You're right. Because I think, you know, there was a situation last week where, you know, Carson Wentz had been hurt for most of the preseason. So the topic had not come up, even though we kind of knew he was unvaccinated, but he didn't talk to the media because he was hurt. So when he came back, the subject was all about his health and his foot and how he's doing. So, you know, we never got to the vaccination topic. And then he gets hit with the COVID list. And then we had to be like, okay, you know what? We got to take the gloves off now. Like, at this point, like, we got to go in on this guy. And so we did. And it didn't get contentious, but I think he did feel a lot of pressure to, you know, to kind of keep the questions at bay. And I think what I was a little disappointed about is like, okay, I can accept, I guess, you know, someone's reasoning for not doing it. If you at least, let me say this. I think you at least owe the fans an explanation or at least some rationale. You know what I mean? Like, people paying $200 to sit in like the second deck. You know what I mean? So like, give them something. And I think his failure to do that, I think was where I had a problem with it. And so it's not that he didn't articulate, you know, where he stands with it. He said he's still fluid. Okay, whatever. I don't know how long this is going to take. But my point is, like, just at least say, all right, look, here's where I stand and this is why. Which leads me to believe you don't really have a good reason. But that's another story.
Yeah. Carson Wentz, surprisingly not a good decision maker. Who knew? That's a good segue, though, to talk about Carson. You went back and when they traded for him, you went back and watched a lot of Carson Wentz. Again, kudos to you. I would not want to watch 2020 Carson Wentz. It was not, as you know, it was not super good or super consistent. But what did stand out to you when you went back and watched Carson, who was arguably like one of the worst starting quarterbacks in the league in 2020?
Well, I'll start by saying that I think it's one of those situations where this is not an excuse. It's more an explanation, right? So let me make that distinction. I think it's one of those situations where when things start going bad, sometimes it's like a toilet. It just devolves, right? It just goes all the way down. And I think that's kind of what happened with him last year. He couldn't get the train back on the tracks. And the train was derailed, okay, completely derailed. And instead of, I think, you know, just kind of staying within himself, because that's what you should do in those situations, is just like, let me do what I know how to do, what I do well. What Carson Wentz sometimes tries to do in those situations is he tries to put on his cape. And, you know, he had his own problems. You ain't going to save the team, brother. You know what I mean? Like, you gotta figure out your own stuff before you go over here and try to save this 4-12 football team that really wasn't salvageable anyway.
Right.
Yeah. So that's the bigger picture. Now, more specifically, what I saw was, you know, a guy who, when things are going well, you know, he can thrive. I think what he's got to do is, in the heat of the moment, when the protection breaks down, or when, you know, the coverage isn't what maybe you thought it was, or, you know, whenever things take a turn, he sometimes digs a deeper hole. It goes back to what I was just saying. And so, you know, when the coverage, for example, or excuse me, when the protection breaks down, he really makes bad decisions in those situations, or at least he did last year. I think that if I'm the Colts, okay, what I hang my hat on, and what they are hanging their hat on, is that he is very talented. Like he does have the arm talent is real. Like, his athleticism is real. All those things are legit, right? We saw them before. But how do you get him back to that previous version? That's a hard thing. I think the Colts have a structure that can help him do that. So we will see. I mean, the offensive line situation here will be night and day, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, as long as these guys are on the field, he's got a top five offensive line. I will stand by that. So, you know, let them do their job, and that will help you a long way. That will take you a long way. The other thing is, he's got, I think, a decent set of skill set players. I mean, the receivers are down right now because T.Y. Hilton's out, and they don't have like a Pro Bowl cast type of guys, but they have, I think, adequate guys at wide receiver, and the backfield is very good,
right?
Like, superb. You know what I mean? I think we mentioned off air Nyheim Hines, and just how I think he's one of the most versatile running backs in the entire league. Then you've got Jonathan Taylor, who's 226 and is running 4.3. I'm not tackling that dude, right? So, because I need all my body parts. So, you know, I think he has a lot. If he can't thrive here, or at least get himself back together, if Carson Wentz can't put it back together here, then he is not salvageable. I really believe that. He is not salvageable. He's because this is the perfect place for him. And he's got, I think, one of the elite quarterback coaches in the NFL in Frank Reich. So this is a guy who has gotten it out of him before. I think it's up to him in large part to do it again. So I think it's optimum situation, but it's up to Carson.
You know, okay, one more thing on Carson. How much of that, if he's talked about it, was mental, like his struggles there getting in his own head last year? Did he talk about whether that was a factor in his kind of decline since his 2017 season?
He didn't, but I think other people have said that. Like, you know, mm-hmm. his coaches, for example, who know him very well. There are some former Eagles coaches even on the staff now, and Frank Reich obviously knows him. And what I've been told repeatedly by coaches and people in the front office is, we just got to get him to play within himself. And this goes back to what I saw in the film, which is Carson Wentz, he tried to be a savior. And like, it's not the game, man. You know what I mean? Like, there's just, that's just not going to work. It generally doesn't work unless you are Aaron Rodgers. Maybe can do that, right?
Yeah. Mahomes in the Super Bowl without his O-line. Still Russ can do that. Yeah.
Right. Russ can do that. We've seen him do it. Right. There's a select group of guys who can do that. He's not in that group. I think he's good enough, but he's not in that group. So you got to change his thinking. Now, that's hard to do. This guy's 28 years old. So that's going to be the challenge. I mean, I think this is going to be a tough job, but I do think it's doable. But I'm not going to tell you it's easy. It is going to be tough. So, but again, I think the key is going to be, you know, he'll be in a better situation. He just has to, you know, not overcomplicate it and not try to take too much of this on himself. So we'll see.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Speaking of tough job, I do want to get into the offensive line with the Colts because they're going to be challenged with this new defensive line that the Seahawks have, bringing in Kerry Hyder, just revamping the defensive line from what fans and what people have saw from last season. What do you expect here? And you mentioned some of the pieces that they brought over in the offensive line. What are you expecting?
It'll be interesting because I have been kind of curious, you know, to see what the Seahawks defense looks like. Because, I mean, I think, first of all, being, you know, in the AFC and being someone who covers mostly an AFC team, you know, we don't see the Seahawks all the time. So the last time the Colts saw the Seahawks, they were a very different team. Their personnel was very different on defense. So this is going to be very different in terms of the matchup. I think definitely the Colts are, they thrive, their physicality is really what they thrive on. And so they're going to attack you. Their offensive line is going to attack you. They want to be the aggressors. They're going to pull Quentin Nelson and get him out front. It's coming. I'm telling you, it's coming because that's what they do, right? He's the best pulling guard I've ever seen. Like, he's just, he's fantastic at it.
There's one of them takes. Yeah, I told you that comes. Yeah, that's not just willy-nilly. That's not what you've seen a lot of guards.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, like, because most of the time you don't even remember that. You know what I mean? You see those things every Sunday and it's like, you know, they're pulling the guard. You know what I mean? And when Quentin Nelson pulls, it's like, dude, did you see that? You know, like that's it looks different, man. You know, it's like, because like he just clears out three guys and you're like, ooh, you know, so, you know, and then you got a really physical running back behind him. So I guess what I'm saying is I don't know what to expect from the Seahawks, but I am looking forward to the matchup. I mean, I know that Pete does a great job of always, you know, coming up with concepts and reinforcing to his staff to, you know, to always stay ahead, stay ahead of the curve on defense. And I just think it's going to be a great matchup. I mean, I think both sides are going to get tested. There's no question about it. And being the season opener, I think that adds some additional intrigue, you know, because you don't completely know what you're getting, you know, going into it. So I'm curious. I mean, you probably could tell better than me, but I'm curious to see how that matchup goes. I think it's going to go a long way toward deciding the outcome.
No, you answered it. Quentin Nelson. I'm going to be watching him. I can't wait to see what he does. But another guy I want to talk about is, you know, the TY, man.
Oh, yeah. Nobody on the audio can see Chris looking like a dude flagging down planes.
But, yeah, with the injury of TY Hilton, the wide receiver unit, is there another leader or another person that's going to step up, or is it wide receivers by committee where they're all going to have to come together and make plays and make the job easier for Carson Wentz? And not to mention the Seahawks secondary the cornerback room is still trying to figure itself out. So Colts fans, there's a little break for you there. If you're worried about, there's no TY. So who's stepping up, or is it going to be a committee?
Yeah. Well, I'll start by saying that just based on the little glimpses we saw with them in training camp with Carson Wentz and TY Hilton, because as I said, Wentz was out for so long, you know, we didn't see them together very much, but for the week or so they were on the field together, it looked pretty good. And, you know, Carson is a guy who wants to push the ball down the field. Well, T.Y. Hilton is your man, right? I mean, he won a game against the Seahawks, you know, I think two meetings ago would have been 2013. I remember that game vividly. I mean, that was T.Y. Hilton's like coming out party against Richard Sherman of all people.
Right,
So anyway, and he won that with, you know, Andrew Luck going down the field to him and really, you know, exploiting that strength in their their game. So they don't have that. So I think what you'll see is you're going to see a lot of Michael Pittman, honestly. And, you know, you guys are familiar with the Pac-12. You probably have seen a lot of Michael Pittman over the years at USC. He is, I think, a guy who's on the verge of, I'm not saying like superstardom, but like I think he's on the verge of like, okay, this might be maybe, you know, a Pro Bowl level guy in a couple of years. I think he's like that on that trajectory. We'll see, though. He's got to do it, and he won't have, you know, T.Y. Hilton across from him, so he's going to get that extra attention. So he's going to have to show up on a different level now than he would have, because, you know, he doesn't have someone else to draw that attention. If you look back at 2020, a lot of the big plays Michael Pittman made, if you watch the film, you'll also see T.Y. Hilton clearing stuff out and taking defenders with him down the field. And so without that, you know, can he do it on his own? I will tell you what I love about Michael Pittman is his physicality. You know, he doesn't have like that DK Metcalf speed, but he does have size. I mean, he doesn't look like a Greek goddess, but he definitely has size, and he has physicality. His father was a running back. The biggest biceps I've ever seen. I covered Michael Pittman Sr. That's how long I've been.
Oh man.
That was my first year in the NFL. My first year in the NFL, Michael Pittman was a running back in Tampa. So anyway, you know, he really did, I think, absorb that mentality from his father. He was a really physical running back. He has a lot of that in him, in his game. Like if you get him, they don't throw a lot of screens to him, but if you do, like, he ain't got a problem running through you. Like, he's fine with that. In fact, he's like, cool, you know? So that's going to be an interesting challenge, I think, for secondaries this year, how to deal with him physically. You know, he can play the jump ball as well because he's a big guy. The other guy I have to mention here is Paris Campbell.
Okay.
Paris Campbell has been probably one of the like a top five tees in the NFL the last 2 years because he's just been hurt over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if this is the year he stays healthy. I'm not about to promise you that. But if he does, I will tell you, I have rarely seen a team more excited to get a guy in the draft when they did get him a couple years ago. Now, I had some conversations with Frank Reich, and he had a lot of plans for this kid. And they just haven't panned out. But he looks good. He's healthy. He looks 100% to me. And, you know, as long as he can stay out there, look, he has a lot of ability, a lot. I'm just telling you. They have a lot of unique ways they want to use him. But he's got to be available. So we'll see. It's week one, so he's out there, and we'll see what happens. But he's the other guy to watch for sure. They'll use him out of the slot. You'll see him on reverses. You'll see him on screens. Think Percy Harvin a little bit, you know, but I think a better wide receiver overall than Percy probably was. We'll see though. He's got to prove it.
Okay.
Chris, I got a quiz for you. When we did our Falcon show with Tori, I think
2 years ago,
maybe 2 years ago or last year, we broke the news to Chris that Julio's name is not Julio.
Oh my goodness.
He didn't know his name was Quintoris. So do you know T.Y. Hilton's real name?
I do not. Tyler Jackson?
No, you do. Okay. Steven, what's T.Y. Hilton's real name?
His name is actually Eugene. And
I knew you didn't know.
Come on, man. Right.
And I'm trying to remember the story. Like, where did it even come from? I wish I could remember. I don't remember the story. I should know that, right? But
okay.
I don't remember the story where T.Y. actually comes from. And now you got my brain racing, so
we're gonna figure it out after the show. I just wanted to throw. I knew you didn't know. So I talk about T.Y.
I really thought his name was T.Y. and it stood for, you know, Tyler Young Hill.
Nope.
And or Travis Young, and you're like, no, it's actually Eugene.
It's not even close. Like, yeah, no. Julio Quintoris.
Right. You set me up, man.
No, I just maybe you could have known. We didn't talk about that pre-show. I just threw it out there on the fly. I thought it'd be funny.
It's kind of like. It's almost like a rapper name, you know what I mean? Like just like random letters in front of a name, you know? It's like,
yeah. No,
what am I changing my name to, man? Let me think.
It's like Future.
YFN.
Do you know Future's real name?
Yes, Navy Davius.
Nadavius. Something that lets you know he's black for sure. Yes,
exactly. We'll keep moving along here. I want to stick with the offense because you talked about someone previously during one of the segments here. You mentioned his name and Nyheim Hines, and
he brings a lot to the table. Coming out of the backfield, you can line him up at right wide receiver. Talk about the challenges the Seahawks are going to have to figure out a plan to slow him down, just because he is a unique player in this league that he can, you know, have two carries for six rushing yards, but then on the other end, eight targets for eight catches and 99 yards and a touchdown.
And he might return punts too. That's the other thing.
Wow.
He took one to the house last year. So
okay,
like he's legit. So I think that what you'll see with him is he's just a guy you have to account for, because you don't know how they're going to use him. He can be on the field, but what's he going to be doing? You know, that's the question. It's like, you know, if Jonathan Taylor's out there, you know what he's going to do, right? Like, they're not going to split him out wide and be like, all right, go run a go route. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, he's going to run the ball between the tackles. You know what I mean? And run somebody over and then run, you know, 30 yards in half a second. But, it's very interesting with Nyheim Hines. He was a slot receiver initially at NC State, which is kind of the origin of all this. And he got recruited, I think, as a running back, but he was a track guy. So they were like, yeah, we're stacked at running back. Go play receiver and let's see how it goes. Oh, it went pretty well. And then when they needed him at running back, they put him back there. But he kept those skills fresh. And so the Colts have really tapped into that. I mean, he had, I believe, the most targets of any Colts player last year.
Wow.
Now, obviously not the most yards, because they're throwing it out of the backfield a lot. But the most targets, that's impressive. You know,
that's a Philip Riversy stat right there.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. That's Austin Eckler stuff, right?
So
yeah. And I knew that would happen with Philip Rivers, and it absolutely was true. So you'll see that, though. That's not going to go away just because Philip Rivers is not the quarterback, because it's really something the Colts offensive staff wants to dig into. And you'll still see him, though. You know, there are instances I saw in training camp where he was on the field with Jonathan Taylor, and sometimes they would put them both in the backfield, and then they'd put Hines in motion and, you know, run him into the slot, and basically he becomes a slot receiver. But that's the eye candy stuff that they can do, because, you know, he can hurt you in a lot of different ways. But he's a really unique player, man, a really fun player. As you said, you know, he's also a player who could have those two carries for 6 yards, but he's also a guy who can run the football. He's surprisingly effective as a runner, and actually surprisingly physical for a guy his size. He's only like 5'8" and, you know, 205 pounds maybe, but he's a really compact runner and a smart runner, and knows how to use his leverage really well. So yeah, you got to account for him. No question about it. And I really think they have plans for him this year. I'm curious to see if his role grows in the offense this year.
The biggest question is, do you play fantasy?
I don't, but I get enough fantasy questions that I get it.
That's probably for the best.
It's okay. I was going to say, I'm guessing you drafted Mr. Hines, but you don't even play.
I did.
But Mr. Holden,
I think one year last year he had like a game where he had like 10 catches or something like that, or something.
Maybe it was
like
in Detroit. Yeah.
It was like Thursday Night Football or something, and he went crazy.
Ah, Tennessee. Yes.
Oh yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. He went off on my bench, and I was like, I'm not letting that happen again. Put that brother back in the game. Drafted him this year. Anyway, no one wants to hear about my fantasy team. Tupac cares if nobody else cares.
You never know, man. You never know.
The Colts D line. I mean, like you said, the trenches are going to decide this game. I think, like, irregardless of the quarterback disparity and talent, like, that doesn't matter. This team lost to Colt McCoy last year, right? Like, the trenches get things done. Who should the Seahawks be most worried about up front on Sunday?
Well, from a defensive perspective, is DeForest Buckner. So actually, I wrote a story about him this week in The Athletic. And what I really was trying to convey was just how much attention he drew from offenses last year. And he told me about a game against Cleveland. Remember the game the Colts lost? And he said, you know, they basically cut block me the entire game. And I don't have a problem with that. But I also know, like, when you're consistently going for a dude's legs, it's like, you know what, we can't stop this guy. And I think that was their way of saying, we can't block him straight up. We're just going to cut this guy all day long. He gets doubled. He gets cut blocked, you know, and he was all pro last year. And look, he's not Aaron Donald. But I think whatever the next level is after Aaron Donald, I think that's where he is. I mean, he's in that select group of guys who I think are, you know, behind Aaron in terms of, you know, the three techniques who really, I think can blow up your line of scrimmage. He can rush the passer. I mean, he's had 12 sacks in his career at one time. So, you know, he had 10 last year. So, I mean, he's going to be coming. And this is really doing that last year with what I thought was a very minimal edge rush. So they feel like they've got a better edge rush this year. And he's back and he's 100%. He was hurt last year. So, yeah, look for number 99 is what I tell you. The other thing I would say is Kwity Paye, first round pick, coming off the edge. I think this kid has a lot of potential. He looked like a power rusher at Michigan. What I've learned is that was more the scheme and not necessarily his skill set.
Right.
They're lining him up out wide and coming for the quarterback, you know, as a true edge rusher. And he gets off the ball. Like he looks like a speed rusher, which I never would have imagined. So I'm curious to see, you know, if it carries over from the preseason.
That's an interesting anecdote about DeForest Buckner, because that Cleveland O-line was good last year. It was probably one of the best, like, four or five O-lines last year. And even that unit with a really well-respected O-line coach whose name escapes me at the moment. But, like, that's a good team being like, you know what? We can't block this guy. Like, that's humbling.
True.
Like, that's telling. You probably will see the Seahawks do, you know, some similar stuff. Perhaps with some success, perhaps not. But like you said, we'll see. The two best skill position players in this game are probably DK and Tyler Lockett. Like, that's probably not very, very close. They're going to wreak havoc on a lot of secondaries this year. They did that to a lot of secondaries last year, save for any game against the Rams. How can the Colts potentially slow down those two dudes?
I think this is going to be their biggest challenge. I mean, there's a lot. There's Russell, obviously, but I think he's connected to this, right? Because he's going to be delivering the ball. And I will say, look, I actually think the Colts front seven, their speed in the front seven actually levels that playing field a little bit. But I worry more about the guys on the outside, the perimeter, because that's, I think, their Achilles heel. They have Xavier Rhodes, who I thought was a terrible signing a year ago, actually played very well last season. So I was happy to be wrong about that, like, because I was like, ooh, this might be bad. And he, to his credit, he played very well and locked down a few guys last year. The problem is he only plays one side. And they have Kenny Moore, who plays in the slot. He's the rare slot corner who is basically only a slot corner. He's excellent at it. Okay, like, he's tremendous, but he's really not as effective playing outside. So they generally have Rakia Sin or someone else play on the other side, and that's where they get into trouble. You know, so Rakia Sin is very much a grabby corner. I think he's gained a reputation. I think the officials are looking for it now. So I think they know that the hold is coming. We saw it when, you know, those officials come to training camp every year to kind of give the test run, as they do with all teams. And when the crew came to Indy this year, we saw Rock get flagged quite a few times. And so, you know, I hope that is not, you know, a sign that this is going to be a recurrence for him. Now, he's also very aggressive and can make plays on the ball, you know, but he's very much boom or bust, you know. So great play, bad play. Bad play, great play, that ain't going to get it done. You know, I think he needs to be more consistent. So it's really, I think, their biggest weakness on defense is their cornerback depth. So, you know, I mentioned Kenny Moore. I think he is a fantastic player, but really he's not a conventional corner. You're going to see him play in space and blitz and do a lot of unconventional things. You know, the guy who's really going to have to follow guys down the field on one side of the field is Rakia Sin. So, and you know, honestly, Xavier Rhodes has to, he has to prove that he can do it again too, because I thought he was a little up and down in training camp himself. He's now 31 years old. So, I mean, he's got some things to prove as well. So that is where they have a chance, I think, to hurt the Colts. I like their safeties though, quite a bit. I think they have two underrated safeties in Julian Blackman and Kari Willis at strong safety, Julian playing the free safety. Those two guys, I think, are going to be a tandem here for a long time.
I only know a little bit about Rock post-draft. I liked him pre-draft. I just saw a clip of him in the preseason get burnt pretty bad for a touchdown. Yeah. And I just remember seeing the comments. And I remember now. Do Colts fans like Rock or what's
nah,
going on?
They're not. Okay. Okay. He's like public enemy number one. It's yeah. You know what I mean? Because like playing corner is hard, right? And your mistakes get put on Front Street, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there are bigger problems on the roster than him. However, I get it. You know, if you're a casual fan, you see this dude get beat like a drum every couple of weeks, you're going to be like, get somebody else. The problem is, I don't think their depth is that good. So I think for now, I think it's him or bust.
I think so. Chris, he's the for Seahawks fans reference. He's Trey Flowers. They're the same problem over here in Seattle. Every time Trey gives up anything,
you said it.
It's like get him out of here. They put, yep. Yeah, just all yeah. No, it's.
And it's not that simple, right? It's not that simple.
No,
and that's what I try to convey to people, but nobody wants to hear that. I understand it, but nobody wants to hear it.
Yeah, that's how I could ID it when I just read a few comments. I was like, Colts fans don't like this guy, huh? Because he
very
got
perceptive.
No benefit of the doubt. And I'm like, he's there, Trey Flowers. Okay. Yep. I want to ask you about that. The way you describe the Colts, actually, and this reminds me of a piece you had a few years ago when you guys got to sit into the, I think it was the GM's draft room. And he mentioned like, hey, like the Seahawks influence, kind of how we wanted to go about things. I think specifically defensively. Why is that still the case that kind of there's some Seahawks-y like beliefs in terms of team building? And if so, why is that? Why did they choose the Seattle as a team to kind of mimic in that regard?
Well, there's a couple things. I think it's more scheme-ish, more scheme related than necessarily philosophical, but definitely there's a couple of variables. Number one, Ed Dodds, who is the assistant general manager, comes from Seahawks front office. And like, I mean, you can tell a lot of the players that the Colts defensively, have interest in, you could tell they're players that you could see in a Seahawks uniform too,
right?
A lot of times. I think some of their metrics, I think, go back to Seattle, the long corners. Like I will tell you, for example, Chris Ballard, their GM, has like a hard and fast rule on cornerbacks. He's like, if that dude ain't 6 feet, don't even bring him to me. You know what I mean? Like he's like, does not play. And he's like, really? I need him to be like 6'1",
Very hockey.
So I think that they've taken principles from a lot of places. Andy Reid, for example, has had a huge influence on Chris Ballard because he worked with him in Kansas City. He also was in the Chicago front office in the 2000s. So he's a big Lovie Smith fan and some of the things that he did on defense. So he's taken bits and pieces of a lot of places, but he really does respect the Seahawks front office. There's no question about that. And like I said, Ed Dodds has a lot of influence. And Ed Dodds being really Chris Ballard's right-hand man, you're going to get a lot of Seahawks influence because of that. So I think it's a combination of things. And I think just really respecting the job that they've done over the years too is really, partly what it comes down to. So it's definitely a nod to Seattle for sure.
Yeah. No, you can see it even the way they spend money, like the Colts don't get busy in free agency like that. They'll bring back their own guys, short-term deals. If they do make a splash like Buckner, they did with Buckner, traded him, paid him, and then, they'll trade for Dwayne Brown or Jamal Adams or something like that. And pay. It's very, very similar. Like even the Colts kind of now remind me of a little bit of early Seahawks work. If you could tell, Pete was like, all right, let's get a good O-line, because they were spending a lot of money on the O-line back when Russ was a rookie. Let's be good in the trenches on both sides. They lucked out getting a Hall of Fame corner in the fifth round. But like you could just, the resource allocation is very similar too. Yeah. Putting the quarterback in the position, like, look, you just don't got to mess it up. Yeah. Just get out there and just be you and we'll win games. Now we'll see how that goes with Carson. But
I like it in theory. Yeah.
No, it makes sense.
And I think, honestly, I really feel like, a lot of this also comes from working with people who have job security too. In other words, John Schneider's not worried about getting fired. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He could be like, we're going to do this the right way. And I think that you have to have the confidence to say that and be like, I don't know if it's going to work this year, but I know over the long haul, this is going to be the way to do things, right? And I just think there's not enough personnel people, and it applies to coaching too, but there's just not enough people running teams who have that confidence in themselves to say, you know what, I got a plan and I'm going to trust my plan. And they do. And I think that applies here too.
We are a gambling show of record, right, Mike?
Are we? Okay.
No, I'm playing.
I mean, what's the last thing I gambled on? I gambled on the presidency for sure.
Oh, yeah. That was probably the last
thing. I won a few $100 on Biden winning.
Yeah, I think that was the last one.
Oh, no, I lost $100 on Nate Robinson against Jake Paul. That was a, you know, we don't have to, let's not spend too much time on that. Yeah,
that. I didn't get in that because.
That's questionable.
Well, you know, Nate's from Seattle. I'm from Seattle. Nate's from South Seattle. I'm from South Seattle.
Thought he would represent. I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Against a professional boxer. No.
I'm explaining why. Like, I was repping for hometown.
Sentimental choice. Sentimental.
Exactly. I was betting with my heart, not my mind. Chris wouldn't have been
my mind. You're a terrible gambler then.
Yes. See, that's what hashtag.
There's levels to this. He's not on that level. Yeah. But we always do this. We started it, 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so. Whatever. We'll call it 2 years ago. Over or under. And we pick certain players or just a stat. So we're going to go with Carson Wentz passing yards. 220.5. Are you going to take the under or the over?
It's a tough one because I do think he'll throw for a lot of yards this year. I'm going to say under only because here's why though. I feel like I'm not saying I'm real confident in this, but my rationale, I'll give it to you. My rationale is he is rusty. He might be rusty, honestly, because I mean, this dude hadn't done anything. He either hurt the whole preseason. Then you go on a COVID list for a week. And it's like, you know, here we are 4 days before the game. Like, all right, hey, how about some practice? You know, it's like, dude, like, and your number one receiver's hurt. So
yes.
I'm like, I'm not saying if I'm the Colts, are you putting the game in that guy's hands? You know, so I don't know that we're going to see like 40 pass attempts unless the score gets up, you know, upside down. So that's my rationale.
Makes sense. No, I'm not mad at that.
No, that's fine.
Broke it down well.
I think he averages probably a little lower than that, I think, or probably did last year. So that's it's about fair. It's betting the under is a safe one, I think.
I don't know what this
Seahawks, I think for these two teams, yeah, I feel like it is.
Well, I think both teams are probably really afraid of turning the ball over. On Sunday, they know that, like, hey, a turnover can kill us in a game that they both expect to be a dogfight, which it might be, because both teams consider themselves to be strong in the trenches. So that's fair.
And they both like to run the ball too. So.
Yes, that is it. Oh God, if you say run the ball three times in the mirror, Pete Carroll shows up like that
a fairy godmother.
Yeah. Like Pete Carroll's a running back candy man. So that's how much he cares about running the ball here. Now we'll really put you on the spot. We'll put you on the spot here. We need a game pick. The Seahawks are favored by 2.5. The line has moved since it opened, which I believe it opened at the Colts favored by 2.5. That's a swing, but that's what happens when you become the COVID Colts. So what you got? Give us a winner and a score.
I think the game being at home helps a lot. Drum roll.
Here we go.
But, you know, reversal here. I'm actually going to go with Seattle. I tell you, say a score. You want a score? I would say 26-24. And I think here's why. I just feel like I think the Colts are going to be a playoff team. I like them as a team. I like their talent. I think they, top to bottom, I think one of the better teams in the league in terms of just the way they're built, not saying the quarterback and all that. But top to bottom, pretty good team, a lot of depth. The problem is too many key guys in and out in this preseason, and I don't think they're a finished product. They're definitely not a finished product. I think it's going to take them a while, and the problem is they got this – the front end of their schedule is nasty. So they got Seattle, they got the Rams, they have Tennessee, the Dolphins, and Baltimore. Those are their first five games.
You get a break in Miami?
No, that's going to be good defense, maybe, though.
Miami's on the road in September, you know, hot, you know, so like they got the advantage. You know, there's a lot of reasons like that could go bad too, you know, so
0-5.
They'll win some.
They'll figure it out.
They're well constructed, like Steve was saying. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, I mean, that's the fact that it's on the front end after the preseason that they have had, I think that is actually kind of a recipe for trouble. And Eric Fisher, by the way, their left tackle, I would be surprised if he gets out there this Sunday. He's coming off the PUP list, and really isn't due to practice until Wednesday. So I have my doubts.
Oh, no. We've all seen what happens when Carson doesn't have great protection. Oh, God, exactly. Godspeed to that brother. Also, I almost don't want to wish him Godspeed because get your butt vaccinated.
Yes, like, that would help.
With Carson Wentz, exactly. I've seen was a little clip where Carson's like, yeah, I've weighed the pros, I've weighed the cons. And that's what made me want to ask the question about you guys covering, because I might have shouted from the heavens, what right. are the cons, Carson? Tell us exactly. the cons. Oh, that's all right. We don't
can't.
Yeah, no, we're both Washington State grads. So I hope one of the receivers that steps up, Desmond Patton. To shout out to Dez. He made the 53, right?
He did. Yeah. And I thought that, you know, they had some depth at that position. So I was wondering if he'd make it. And I think the fact that they went with six receivers tells me they didn't want to cut him because they were worried about somebody grabbing him. He had a strong preseason. His camp was just eh. And I thought maybe that would put him in jeopardy. But he came with it. He brought it in the preseason games. And I think that got him on the 53. So shout out to Dez Patton.
There we go. Selfishly rooting for him. Stephen Holder, we appreciate you, man. Appreciate all your wisdom. You plugged the DeForest Buckner piece. That's out on The Athletic right now.
Yes, it is. Yes, all right,
what else we got? You got another season preview-ish thing come in, or any features you want to plug real fast?
Yeah, I'm going to hit some like a recipe for success for them later this week. You know, how do the Colts get where they want to go this year? COVID not withstanding, but like, you know, like what's the blueprint? And so I have some thoughts on that, and I'll put that out before game day later this week.
Let's plug one more thing from Steven. The Matt Hasselbeck, is it a burrito story?
Oh man, I love that story.
It's a bad burrito, right? Is that what it is?
It is an oldie but goodie. But like, yeah, your folks out there would love Hasselbeck. Can I just tell you, I know this is nothing to do with the podcast, but like Matt Hasselbeck is like one of my top five favorite people I've ever covered. Like this dude is amazing. Like we would go in the locker room. Remember when we could go in the locker room?
Yeah. Oh man.
We'd go in the locker room and I would, you know, just go over, like, you know, shoot the breeze with him. 30 minutes later, I'm like, Matt, I got work to do, man. You know what I mean? Like, I got to go. He was like, oh yeah, one more thing, you know? And he's just like the best storyteller I've ever been around. He's incredible. Anyway, the short version of the story is he almost died from a Chipotle burrito. I'm exaggerating, but only a little.
Oh, so, man. I'm gonna find the headline real. Yeah,
it's my pinned tweet, actually. So you'll see it.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. Well, so just plug your Twitter then.
Yeah.
What's your Twitter?
Yeah, yeah. Holder is Holder Steven. So HolderSteph, because my mama made it hard. SteHen, Steve Holder Steven. So,
and the headline is Matt Hasselbeck, the abominable burrito, and a Colts win like none other. Yes, I remember story. Reading that. I'm glad I remember that while we had you on. Very fun story. Yes, Steven does great work at The Athletic, guys. Make you guys are following him. Definitely follow him this week, if nothing else, you know, to learn about the Colts and their opponent, learn about the Seahawks and their opponent this week, man. Steven, we appreciate you joining us. We appreciate you guys for listening to the Seahawks Man to Man podcast. Make sure you guys subscribe on Apple, Google Podcasts, everywhere you get podcasts, man. It's a short version. We will catch you guys after the game on Sunday. On that note, we're out.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.